Christopher Light, and this is The Connection. Bill Bradley says reports of his demise are greatly exaggerated, but last night's Democratic debate looked a lot like a surrender. Al Gore was talking to his Republican rivals. Bill Bradley seemed to be talking to a lost cause. So has the hope of a reformist and progressive and contrarian conversation dissolved now after just a few weeks of this political process? John McCain's maverick candidacy looks threatened now by George W.'s daunting network of endorsements and boss support. New York, California, the other Super Tuesday primary states could be the end for the rebels. Where do people go who want to stir up the political process, both as voters and as candidates? Are the iconoclasts and the progressives relegated now to obscurity or maybe to the margins of the Reform Party or to Ralph Nader's Green Party? Connection listeners, what is a liberal or a progressive citizen to do now? Do you see any space in the two-party system for real challenge, real change? Our connection phone is 1-800-423-8255 or 1-800-423-TALK. Our guest in the studio is Robert Reich, who was Bill Clinton's labor secretary. He's now professor at Brandeis University. Also joining us by phone are Katrina Vandenhuvel, editor of The Nation magazine, also Jim Sleeper, the author of Liberal Racism, also Orlando Patterson, professor of sociology at Harvard University, author most recently of Rituals of Blood. Join the conversation, Connection listeners, at 1-800-423-8255. Bob Reich, you're a Clinton Democrat who liked Bill Bradley. Are you swimming back to the good ship Gore nowadays? Are you still out there?
Oh, I'm still out there. In fact, I've been in a couple of states. American politics is a little bit unpredictable. I don't think Bradley has much of a chance, frankly, Chris. I don't think that's great news this morning. But we must not let polls and pundits dictate outcomes of elections before they occur. March 7th, a lot of people will have an opportunity to register their votes and declare who they're for.
We don't want to preempt anything, but what are we feeling in our hearts here?
We're feeling pain. I feel their pain. Chris, the big issue here, it seems to me, and you touched on it in your introduction, is insurgents versus the establishment. It's happening in both parties. In 1960, 62.8% of voting-age Americans chose between John F. Kennedy and Richard Nixon.
The percentage again?
It was 62.8% of voting-age Americans. I mean, that was a big turnout. But in 1996, our last presidential election, just 48.9% of voting-age Americans chose between Bill Clinton, Bob Dole, and Ross Perot. And it's been a gradual decline since 1960. If you look outside the Old South, I think that those figures are skewed a little bit by the Voting Rights Act of 1965. But outside the Old South, you see a deterioration that really has been uninterrupted. The question is how to get back the passions and the commitments of the great party of non-voters, many of whom are poorer than average voters, many of whom are less well-educated, many of whom need a lot of help in the economy. That's, I think, the real big issue here.
Wait a second. If they don't vote, why are they important in this kind of a choice? They're important, obviously, to their own lives and to the quality of the country, but why do we care if they don't vote?
Well, I think we've got in this country into a little bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy. They don't vote, many of these people, and so politicians stop courting them, stop paying very much attention to them. Therefore, we don't, as a country, move on an agenda that has to do with universal health care, good schools for poor people, good child care for people who are below median wage, and many of these people are in desperate need of child care, good transportation for them, all of these things that would widen the circle of prosperity. We don't really talk enough about them. We don't do very much about them. These people feel confirmed in their sense that politics has nothing in it for them. Therefore, they don't vote again, and this cycle repeats itself.
Those aren't the people that John McCain churned up, but he did seem to renew the interest in the game, and maybe in the pleasure, maybe even in the sort of self-interested choice that American politics is supposed to offer. What's going to happen when when we have, let's face it, two extremely, should we say, controlled or
scripted.
Yeah.
Scripted. Formula, you know, John McCain, I'm not sure I agree. Chris, I'm not sure I agree with you. I think John McCain did capture the imagination of a lot of Americans who did not vote, do not vote. Many of them are independents. They do vote. This group of independents keeps on getting larger and larger and larger.
They were independents, but they weren't the people suffering for want of daycare.
No, but a lot of the Reagan Democrats, look at the old Macomb County that everybody refers to in Michigan, the heart of Reagan Democrats, a lot of the blue-collar workers who don't really have very strong party affiliations. Many of them have stopped voting in 1992 and 1996. Apparently, if you believe exit polls, they did vote. They voted for John McCain, not because he was promising daycare, but because he was promising a new kind of politics
Yep.
that would listen to them.
What about your friend Bill Bradley? He certainly aimed at the at poor Americans in real need. Why didn't he reach them?
I don't know exactly. I think that, and again, we don't want to have this conversation be a benediction over Bill Bradley's political grave. He's not dead yet. He's almost there. But you know, Bill Bradley is still very much alive politically. But nonetheless, I think it's fair to say he did not stir the imaginations of the public. 6 months ago, he was the darling of the press. He could do no wrong. People were very excited about his insurgent campaign. But he did not respond to Al Gore's accusations, the kind of negative campaign that Gore waged in New Hampshire and in Iowa. He appeared rather, that is, Bradley appeared rather listless, a little bit above the fray. I think that he was hurt as well by John McCain's kind of feistiness. If there is going to be an insurgent, America has a difficult time, just in terms of the press and the public's attention span, paying attention to two insurgencies at the same time. And John McCain kind of stole the thunder of Bill Bradley.
Could I ask Katrina VandenHeuvel of The Nation, what happened to Bill Bradley?
Well, I think Bob is right. There's no question that he was victimized by McCain. But I think also if one sometimes must believe the conventional wisdom, which is that this is a year of issues, I'm sorry, a year of character and not of issues. And Bill Bradley, in a sense, tried to defy that. He wasn't going to play the game of, you know, drinking brewskis or naming his most cherished book or discussing his personal religious faith. And he wanted to talk about issues. And I think one has to be indebted to Bradley, and I hate to talk in the past tense, but for bringing in themes in this campaign that might not otherwise have been there. I think, and Bob might speak more personally about this, but Al Gore is certainly a man of the Democratic Leadership Council, the centrist heart and soul of the Democratic Party, which has different factions, and he might well have coasted on his talk of a time of unprecedented prosperity and let's do small step policies. And Bradley pushed him to speak to larger themes about health care and education and investment in people and even on gun control and campaign finance, an issue Gore doesn't want to talk about and which, he's, you know, this administration has been terrible on. Bradley pushed the issue of a wealthy country that should not have one in five children living in poverty or 44 million without health care. I guess one of the tactical mistakes, and we can all be, you know, the Monday morning quarterback or whatever, but Bradley, in trying to paint Gore as the poster boy of the NRA, for example, or looking at his record on choice 20 years ago, that might not have been the wisest move, even though he tried to show that this is a man you can't trust through those allegations. But rather, where were you, Gore, in the last 7 years? Is this country better off today for millions of Americans, the kinds of people Bob is talking about who don't vote? And what
Katrina, can I just say respectfully, yeah, I disagree with you on almost everything. It seems to me, first of all, there never was much issue difference between them, even after they'd gone over 20 years of votes. But furthermore, there's something I don't get here. In a year of personal difference, no, Bill Bradley didn't You know, he didn't bleed on all the obvious cues on religion, for example, but he's a more interesting personality than Al Gore. He's had a more remarkable life. He writes about it very well. I think there's something wrong with the people.
But he doesn't walk the walk. I mean, he wasn't like white heat. I mean, John McCain was white heat.
No, but he wasn't running against John McCain.
Yeah, but I'm saying in terms of the victimization, you know, in terms of the press attention, when the campaign really got...
Well, let's not talk about victimization here. I mean...
He lost the press's attention at a crucial moment because so many Americans were not paying attention to this process at a time when Bradley was getting a better press attention. And then, you know, again, Gore needs to be indebted to Bradley because Gore basically reconfigured his whole body and not only his policy stances as a result of the competition.
It was amazing.
It was
amazing makeover. I mean, if you look at Al Gore 6 months ago, very ponderous. I mean, the way he held his body, the way he talked, his whole campaign was dominated by K Street lobbyists and PR flacks. And then this makeover into a hyperkinetic dynamo. I mean, he is really, he doesn't stop talking. He talks at a rapid clip. He moves his body around, which, you know, just, he can't stop.
I caught the last night show. I mean, I tuned out the earth tones and the body language. I was just listening on the radio, but did you notice his voice has changed? He's a dramatic actor. It goes high, it goes low, it goes...
He's taken all kinds of coaching. But let me
Can I just throw out, I want to blame the people. What is wrong
Chris,
with the country?
Don't blame the people. There's nothing wrong with America.
Rallying
don't
to the
blame
to the
people.
Boss
look,
candidate.
Now,
wait.
Look, I think, and here I take a little bit of issue with Katrina in terms of this campaign being about character rather than issues, because one of the reasons people are attracted to John McCain is not just his character, it's his stance. He wants to clean up the system. He's telling it like it is. He's giving him hell. You know, people love Harry Truman. Give him hell, Harry. I think that a lot of people looked at Bill Bradley and look at Bill Bradley and say, yes, I like what I hear, but you are not dynamic enough to convince me that you can actually get this done. When they look at Bill, at John McCain, they say, here is somebody who is not only going to give them hell, he has been giving them hell.
But that's a character issue, because if you think about why people are voting for McCain, there are all kinds of reasons. I don't think the campaign finance reform is at the top of people's list. They like his authenticity. They like that he's speaking out, that he's speaking truth to the K Street lobbyists and the Iron Triangle of lobbyists. On the other hand, who's looking closely at his record? Now, certainly one can say a man can evolve, and he may be in some passage. But this is a man who had a close to 100% rating from the Christian Coalition.
John McCain.
Yeah.
But that's down the road. Wait a second. I want to talk about New York. The story in the Times today is not only they're neck and neck, Bush and McCain, but the George Pataki, the governor, has started a new assault on John McCain as being anti-New York. So you get sort of Lee Atwater silly attack politics on top of big money, alligator shoes, bought and paid for, boss politics, and the chances are he's going to win. Why are voters, you know, free American thinking, discriminating folk flocking to these messages?
Well, there are all kinds of reasons, but certainly one is, you know, what you alluded to. People want to kick out those folks in the alligator shoes.
No, they don't. They want to put him in, and they want to buy John McCain is anti-New York, really provincial madness.
The fact that McCain is doing so well in the polls shows one. I mean, New York has more moderate Republicans in many
parts.
Well,
we'll see. I just wonder.
Chris, you don't have faith. You don't have faith. Keep the faith. You know, I think that there is a very strong anti-establishment tendency and trend in America. There always has been. I think it is cresting right now. In both parties, we had, at least for a time, very anti-establishment characters. We do now still in the Republican Party. I think we also have a Reform Party. Who knows? John McCain, if he drops out in the Republican Party, may very well join the Reform Party.
Or run as an independent.
What I mean. Run as an independent Reform Party.
John Anderson did in 1980.
I wonder. Katrina, how can you have it both ways? You're saying he's a very conventional, down the party line Republican voting record, but he's going to be the hope of an independent
movement.
I don't think so.
I think he does have a conservative record on many of the core conservative issues. Look how he's trying to embrace Reagan and saying, you know, he wants to embrace the non-extremism of the Reagan Republican Party, which I find a kind of whitewash of what Reagan was about. On the other hand, he is certainly anti-establishment. There are many strains of populism and anti-establishment in American democratic history. Look at Jesse Ventura. Look at, you know, the populism.
Look at Ronald Reagan himself.
So I'm saying he could run as an independent, and he could attract many of these independents. We don't know for sure what is motivating these independents. Perhaps the only thing that allies them is this anti-Washington, anti-establishment strain.
And again, it's not just the independents. I think if you look at exit polls, it's the people who have not voted for years. 15% of Michigan, for example, 15% of those voters had not voted in the previous two presidential elections. Now, that is very indicative. John McCain brought a lot of people out. Unfortunately, Bill Bradley did not.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, in a way, Chris, it's not so much a failure of the American public. It's a failure, if anybody or anything, it's a failure of the Democratic Party to be able to generate the enthusiasm, the failure of Bill Bradley to generate the kind of enthusiasm.
To put it to commission listeners, is it an up the rebels moment in American politics? Are we kidding ourselves?
Absolutely.
Is it a moment when the rebels are about to be sent home? 1-800-423-8255. The real question is, if Bill Bradley is as finished as he looks and John McCain's in this much trouble as it appears, what is a progressive contrarian to do? 1-800-423-8255. Stand by, Katrina. Jack is on the line.
Hi. A couple of things. I think tactically, I mean, I think in modern politics, public's only going to respond to a high-energy person who wants to get their message out, a Bill Clinton, a John McCain, a Pat Buchanan, a person like that. And Bradley, at one level, failed because he's not that type of communicator. But more importantly, I mean, this was a contrived campaign. The difference between him and Gore is negligible. It's smaller than the difference between McCain and Bush. It's really disappointing to see the issue castigated as or characterized as saying that Bradley's the progressive. This is a person who supported Contra intervention. He's a centrist Democrat, like Gore is. It's a matter of personality. It's not a matter. What disturbs me is that the last progressive push I saw in this country for minimum wage increase came as a result of Pat Buchanan's campaign in New Hampshire, when he scared Bob Dole and other people into supporting something that would help middle and lower class people.
I think it was the Bob Reich campaign and the Clinton cabinet.
No, I think that that Jack is certainly right, that high energy is necessary. But, Jack, I don't agree with you that Bill Bradley and Al Gore are essentially the same thing. And if you look at any of the issues on health care, for example, Bradley was saying quite explicitly, with a very explicit plan that Gore attacked, look, we have to insure everybody. Gore is still, he's moved a little bit, but he's still saying people between the ages of 18 and 55, tough luck. On education, Bradley is saying much, much bigger education initiatives. We're not going to worry as much about the debt or the deficit. Al Gore is saying we've got to get the debt down to zero. Very fiscally conservative. On gun control, campaign finance, Bill Bradley has been out way in front of Al Gore, has pushed Al Gore to bolder positions, but not where Al Gore was initially. So there is or was a difference between them. I think Katrina's right that one of the big contributions of Bill Bradley was to push Al Gore into bolder, at least bolder steps from and positions from where he was before.
1-800-423-8255. Richard is calling from Burlington, Vermont.
Hello.
Hello, Richard. Welcome.
Great segues in there because I heard the word progressives. Here in the Green Mountain State of Vermont, we have formed a progressive party recognized by the Secretary of State, and we are going to give the working people in the state of Vermont an opportunity in November to come out and vote for livable wage, for health care, for child care, and many, many other things.
Who's your candidate, Richard?
Anthony Polina for governor. We're not.
Say it again slowly.
What's that?
Say it again.
Anthony Polina for governor.
Yeah, Anthony Polina for governor.
Can I ask Richard a question?
And you read about it in The Nation. We had a nice little story about your movement just a few weeks ago.
Well, yeah, it's going to happen because people have been left out for too long.
Yeah.
And who's your candidate for president, Richard?
Bill Bradley.
Richard, may I ask you a question?
Not as a progressive. We haven't endorsed anybody. That's my personal view.
And if he's not on the ballot?
What's that?
What if he's not on the ballot in November?
Well, I have to hold my nose.
And vote for? Okay.
Al Gore.
Bob Reich.
I just had a question for Richard that I've been curious about for a very long time, and I'd be interested in your response.
Sure.
Vermont is a kind of seedbed, a hotbed, a center of progressivism.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
Hey, I have asked that question many times. I think it's in
green
the water
thing.
Or the air. I'm not sure.
It's those green mountains.
Well, it wasn't always. I mean, it was 30 years ago, 40 years ago, it was kind of Yankee Republican territory.
George Aiken.
Well, yeah, what
declare
happened?
Declare victory and get out of Vietnam.
I think it's eating Ben and Jerry's ice cream.
But Howard, seriously, you're not interested in the Nader candidacy?
No, not yet.
Oh, that's a waste.
Yeah.
Oh,
I gotta wait and see.
Yeah, are you aligned with the Progressive Caucus and the Congress in any sense?
What's that?
Are you aligned or interested in the work the Progressive Caucus does, the 55 or 56 members of the Congress?
Oh, sure, because Bernie Sanders is in there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Good.
You know, we're talking as if the presidential race is the only where progressives or people who are concerned about the poor and the lower middle class in this country can register their opinions and vote. But we do have a Congress. It is right now a very Republican, a very reactionary Congress, in my view. It has stopped even moderate initiatives.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that all of us who feel strongly that this country is off track in terms of social justice ought to pay a great deal of attention to our congressional candidates.
And there's a real chance this year, because I think it's a margin of 5 seats. And as I mentioned, the Progressive Caucus is a very interesting development, that in the last 5 or 6 years that caucus has gone from maybe 7 people to 55. And it shows that within the Democratic Party, even with all the attention being paid to the divisions and the excitement in the Republican Party, there is a left in the Democratic Party that needs to be built upon and supported. That may not be the cutting edge of anti-establishment politics in this country, but it is a place where they have moved away from the pure centrist policies of the Clinton legacy.
I want to introduce Jim Sleeper, who keeps his eye on racial matters in this country and tries to keep all of our knees from jerking on the subject. Jim, welcome. What about the racial agenda in what's left of this long campaign year?
Well, that's an interesting question, Chris. If I can relate it back to something, an important question that the caller, Jack, just raised. You know, the question is, how did McCain and Pat Buchanan manage to draw so much of this vaguely populist economic sentiment? Why is it that they, and not Bill Bradley, or for that matter, Bob Reich, who I realize is not running for anything, are capturing some of this sentiment against the fat cats, even if McCain is doing it only through campaign finance. And I think there are a couple of, progressives really have to pose this question in a hard way. How did it happen that those guys scoop up that energy? And I think it's not just a matter about personality or temperament. There are a couple themes. I happen to think, and this is a bugaboo of mine, and I write a lot about it, that race is an issue. You know, incidentally, McCain makes a statement on race in the best way I think one can. He has an adopted black daughter who appears with him on the podium. It handles the issue in an interesting way, and a humbling one for some of us, because the National Association of Black Social Workers, Howard Metzenbaum when he was a senator, many Democratic liberals passed legislation to restrict adoptions of blacks by whites. What I'm really trying to say is that I think on race, both Bradley and Gore are a little too far over in terms of prescribing the kinds of remedies that I think have proved counterproductive. That doesn't mean that the answer is McCain or George Bush. Far from it. But I think we've lost a lot of people on that score. The second thing, and this is something that McCain really obviously taps into, I call it the Steven Spielberg phenomenon in deference to Private Ryan. There is something that people are trying to come to terms with in terms of affirming American national identity, even in this post-national age, when even philosophers traditionally on the left, like Richard Rorty, can write books like his Achieving Our Country, and saying, look, we've blown this. We haven't touched this nerve in people. We are leaving it to the Buchanans, the Ollie Norths, and the John McCain, who by no means is as objectionable as Buchanan and Ollie North, to sound that theme. I don't see quite enough of that on the progressive side. I think those are two reasons why we wind up wondering how those other guys stole our issues.
Oh, boy. I mean, in terms of achieving our country and the kind of country we want, I must say, I think, you know, you refer to Saving Private Ryan. I think McCain has gone around far more on the Star Wars theme and taking on evil here and evil there and very gung-ho, and people haven't paid enough attention to foreign policy in this race, to, you know, building up missile defense, which is going to make the world even more dangerous. But I must say, in terms of achieving our country, and if one cares about the values of America and the country it stands for, the Democrats, and certainly Bradley, in speaking to the abominable fact that in a country as rich as we are today, we have so much poverty and we have so many without health insurance, that kind of index of social, those as social indicators, seems to me very much in the tradition of a Richard Rorty in achieving the kind of country we want.
Right. I think that those themes have to be coupled with a more vivid sense of national purpose. That's my point. And incidentally, McCain, even on the defense issue, he would go right into Yugoslavia, he says. Well, so did the German Greens after having a long and wrenching debate about it.
No, I'm talking more about rolling back Iraq, rolling back North Korea, building up missile defense.
Yeah,
I mean, this is the first, I mean, I'm not excusing the Clinton administration, though, in the face of a pretty brutal right wing, which is the first administration since Eisenhower not to ratify an arms control treaty. I mean, that is a real failure in the post-Cold War period, and neither of the Republicans would really move on that front.
McCain is his biography. In terms of foreign policy, in terms of moral heroism, people look at him and they think, this is anti-Clinton. This is somebody who speaks the truth, who not only did not avoid the draft, but who was actually a prisoner of war, who was a tough guy.
Hold the thought, Bob.
But he cares about a lot of things that I care about.
We've got to take a break and say farewell and thank you to Katrina Vandenhuvel at The Nation magazine. Thank you, Katrina. We'll be back after a short break. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston and PRI Public Radio International. Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation, empowering people with innovative internet technology and offering dynamic career opportunities at Allaire.com. I'm Christopher Ledden. This is The Connection. The What's a Progressive to Do connection if John McCain and Bill Bradley are both in deep trouble. Robert Reich is with us in the studio. Orlando Patterson, professor of sociology, joins us by phone. Jim Sleeper is with us by phone from New York. Our phone is 1-800-423-8255 or 1-800-423-TALK. Orlando, I'd like to engage you too on this question of Vietnam. I disagree again with Katrina Vandenhuvel on the matter of John McCain, the significance of that war record. I don't think it's about toughness. I don't think it's about military spending. I think it's about something quite different, a reconciliation, a kind of healing on Vietnam through an understanding of everybody's suffering. But that's my two bits. Where do you come into it, Orlando?
Well, what bothers me about the whole process is that it represents a continuation of trend which political scientists and political sociologists have noted in the American democratic system, and that is the shift from party emphasis and on issues which are clearly articulated, party platforms, to candidate-centered politics. The fact that Gore had to remake himself, as you were discussing earlier, the fact that McCain has attracted so much attention, not because of so much of his policies, but because of his personality, and it's sort of symptomatic of this shift in our political system towards candidate-centered politics. I guess it may be inevitable, but I don't think it is.
I'm going to disagree with you.
What happens in other democracies?
I got to disagree with you completely. With not too much pejorative spin on it, I mean, Gore and Bush are the machine candidates, and the machines are winning against very compelling challenges. How can we say this is an anti-party season?
Oh, the machine is there, but the machine is not presenting a platform which addresses central issues. The machine is busy constructing personalities. Bush, what is Bush? I mean, one doesn't know exactly what he stands for, but that is the whole point. The machine is focused on promoting the candidate.
But it's the party machinery. It's the party machinery that's prevailing here over not too much personality in the case of W, right?
Well, I think that
Bob Reich?
I think that Professor Patterson certainly is right in terms of the trend. Over the years, we've seen much more emphasis on personality and so-called character than on issues. But I want to go back to John McCain for a minute, because I think it's too easy to dismiss him as just personality and character. He is saying some things about the religious right, about money in politics, about clearing up the mess in American politics, about corporate welfare, the Iron Triangle. He is saying things that Americans say to themselves over their kitchen tables, but it is the first time many people hear a politician say it forcefully, vociferously, and in a way that that invites a reaction from the establishment. A lot of people around America don't agree with John McCain on his record, a lot of issues, but they're saying to themselves, right on, because we want somebody to speak truth to power.
Can I just add one thing to that?
Jim Sleeper, please.
Yes, I agree with what Bob Reich is saying there. There is a faint analogy in my mind to Bobby Kennedy, in the sense that people forget that when Bobby Kennedy started running for office, he was widely viewed in the context of those times as quite conservative, as having dragged his feet on civil rights, as being militaristic, as being and so on. He evolved in the course of the campaign in consequence of seeing what kinds of people were rallying to him and sensing the needs they were bringing. That may be happening in some ways to McCain, too. His taking on the religious right is a result of what he sees in front of him and what he sees coming at him. And he has exposed, for everyone's view, the spectacle of a Republican Party, which, again, to harp on my theme of national identity, has these are global transnational capitalists who have left it behind. They're trying to destroy an American war hero. That isn't being lost on people, the symbolism of it. And I think that also is influencing McCain himself.
That's true, and you know,
Orlando Patterson.
It explains some of the attraction of Democrats and McCain, but I'm very nervous. I myself have had exactly the same thoughts about McCain as you just expressed. But when I look at his record, I get very nervous. I can't.
Yeah.
I'd have to see more evidence that he would. This is more than simply a very powerful and very appealing ploy to gain power. Will he do a turnabout on the issue of abortion, on his economic policies? They are. They're not conservative. They're bloody reactionary.
I don't think.
I think one has to look at the man's record.
I agree with you, but I don't think we'll ever really have a chance to find out. Basically, because this is going to be over. I do agree with Chris that the establishment is now just about to clobber John McCain. But let me just go back to one issue that we left dangling, and that's Vietnam, I'm curious about how you others feel about this, but it seems to me that John McCain is speaking to an unresolved issue for many of us of the Vietnam generation who are still confused about the meaning of heroism in terms of Vietnam. Many of us at the time assumed that heroism meant either not going or protesting it. I think it still does, as a matter of fact. But why are we intrigued with somebody who not only went, but was a prisoner for 5 years and displayed a completely different kind of heroism?
I have one response to that. I think it's a very important question. Much has been made, and I think rightly so, of McCain's friendship with John Kerry, who also went to Vietnam, but who emerged from it, as we all know, as a leader of the anti-war protest movement. And I think that McCain's heroism was obviously not the kind of heroism that went out projecting the national goals. It was the heroism of having endured something that he was kind of thrust into, granted because he was a bomber pilot, but he was thrust into it and endured it. It isn't the same kind of heroism we've seen in the past, and I think his reconciliation with Kerry, his understanding of how people who protested the war in the name of the American nation were heroes too in some cases is another thing about him that I think people...
Don't forget his reconciliation with the Vietnamese people too. I mean, he went over there with Kerry.
Could we get back to, I mean, I want to persist with a point I began with. Let's look at some of the things which are not being discussed. One of them, which disturbs me very much, is the horrendous state of our criminal justice system. The gross inequality of this system, the fact that we have the most barbaric rate of the most draconian laws, the highest rate of incarceration behind the Soviet Union, and that we are the only civilized country that's opposed to death penalty. It just amazes me that this never gets on the table. Secondly, the level of inequality is the worst in our modern history, and I just don't see much evidence, certainly not from Gore, certainly not from McCain, of any concern with these issues.
Well, let me just ask Professor Patterson in return why he finds it surprising. If these people who are poor, who in this country have not got the benefits of this rising economy, many of whom have relatives who are in jail, if they aren't voting, if they aren't participating in our politics, how can you expect political candidates to direct their attention to these people? This goes back to the self-fulfilling prophecy we've got into in this country, that we ignore a lot of these people, they become non-voters, and therefore we ignore them even more.
Yeah, you know, people become non-voters partly because they're demobilized. I mean, if you look at the history of voting in America, the years of high voting were the direct result of active involvement of leadership in getting the vote out, in mobilizing people to vote. And I see, again, this is one of the basic sort of problems I see there, little evidence that the Democratic Party has really made much of an effort to remobilize the population. Certainly, this is true at all levels. I'm very disappointed, for example, with what goes on in the Afro-American leadership. When in New York, what's being legitimized now as a major leader, Al Sharpton. I mean, in the case, the problem of an absence of strong leadership which mobilizes voters. One doesn't expect voters do not come out to vote unless they're actively sort of encouraged to do that by leadership, which is committed to that goal.
There, Orlando, if I may say, I mean, we're skirting around an issue, or we're getting close to an issue that Bradley and McCain, to their credit, have really tried hard to raise for the first time in a presidential campaign, and that is campaign finance. The reason neither party is addressing the concerns you're rightly bringing up is obvious. Both parties are committed to preserving a kind of plutocracy, and the establishments are very deeply committed to that, and the funding of campaigns ensures that it's very hard for a candidate to amass enough funds to run who doesn't agree with that agenda.
Jim Sleeper, stand by. Orlando Patterson, too, and Bob Reich. The phone's 1-800-423-8255. Alan is on the line.
Hi.
Welcome, Alan.
Hi. Great conversation.
Thank you.
And I
Welcome.
Called a while ago, and I think everybody's kind of raised what I was going to say, but just to reiterate, I'm a social worker here in Massachusetts, and my window of experience is with people who are very poor. And occasionally I ask, you know, what do you think about politics? What do you think about candidates? And I get this kind of blank stare. People who are that poor don't seem to have the energy or the time to delve into the issues of politics in the way this discussion is going here today. Their concern is not sitting across the kitchen table, as Mr. Reich pointed out earlier, I think, and discussing, oh, this is a great candidate. They're thinking about, how am I going to get to work today because my car may or may not start this morning? Or how am I going to feed my children? Or how am I going to take care of my mother because I have no health insurance to take care of this person? So that's their level of interaction in the world, and that's where their energy goes. Somebody to come along and say, well, listen, I'm a great candidate for politics to be your president because I have these wonderful, it's all above them. It goes over their head. They don't have the time for it, for one.
So, Alan, how do we reignite the passions and the interests and the commitments of people who are less well off in this country. Remember,
remobilize instead of demobilize.
I want to just recall that in 1960 we had almost 2/3 of voting age Americans involved in that presidential election, voting in that election, and that was before the Voting Rights Act, that was before Motor Voter, that was before all of the efforts to make it easier to register. In 1996, it was down lower, below 50%, 48.9% of adult voting age Americans participated. Many people have, over the years, turned off politics. Most of them are below median income. How do we get those people back?
Colin?
I think you do, as the gentleman before, and I'm sorry, I don't recall his name, said that you do need to get into the communities on a level that's going to people's homes and saying, what is it you need? What can we do for you? And truly listening and not presenting this kind of gorish presentation of changing my character, changing my face every time I go on TV or do a different speech so I can get elected. Because people, and it is character. Somebody had before said, oh, it isn't really character, but it is character, because I'll tell you what, every time I walk into a house, these people look right into you to see where is your integrity, where is your character, and if you don't have that, you're not going to be even listened to.
Alan, point taken, and it's a good one. 1-800-423-8255. Daniel is on the line.
Hi there, Chris.
Hello, Daniel.
I think that your guests and the media in general are just not talking about the fact that this is a problem of enormous proportion. We have an utterly failed democracy here. The system is, I think, ugly and corrupt and broken. And the 51% of the people who didn't vote in the last election, I think, I'm not one of them, but I think they may have been politically correct. Because what's the process here? You can vote for a Ralph Nader and so-called throw away your vote. You can hold your nose and vote for Gore. The insurgent candidates are fake insurgents who are completely within the system. They just don't have quite as much money as the top two candidates. And even those fake insurgents don't have a chance of winning.
You know, if I can respond to, I think, what both Alan and Dan are saying, party machines that are now essentially money machines used to be people machines. They did come into your home. People did go to the polls because they felt they owed it to their ward worker, who, yes, did things like bring them a turkey at Thanksgiving or bring them coal when the heat wasn't there. The fact that the parties have stopped dealing with people in a direct way for a number of reasons we could list, some of which were unintended, and have become money machines is one of the reasons why the voting rate is down. People don't always go to the polls out of sheer idealism. There does have to be someone sort of nudging them on the shoulder, yeah, someone they have a connection with.
That's a good point, Jim, because my response to the very cogent points made by the earlier caller concerning the role of poverty in accounting for people not voting. I mean, how do you explain the fact that there is such high voter participation in the 19th century in urban America when people are much poorer? It's because of the reasons, the factors which Jim just mentioned. The parties were involved not just with generating money, but in fact with active engagement with people. Some of it quite corrupt, to be sure. But much of it simply engaging people in the democratic process. And yes, I'm afraid we have become a plutocracy.
Well, I don't know, Orlando, that we want to go back to the era of machine politics, because as you just said, it was a corrupt regime, in some ways as corrupt as the current regime, but a very different, it wasn't money in those days, it was patronage. I think that we have to, in this country, have almost a moral movement to clean up American politics. And I think that's what people are detecting in John McCain.
Yeah.
That is, he is saying to the establishment, the system is rotten. We are not going to tolerate it any longer. Now, as Daniel said, it may be that McCain is sort of a faux surrogate for real populism. He is certainly a creature of the system himself. He's been in the Senate for years. But at least he is articulating something that could turn into a moral movement.
Why not Ralph Nader? But I want to get back to Daniel, too.
Well, I wanted to make one more point. I think we can't choose between is the system corrupt or are the people not paying attention. Both are true. I think after 50 30 years of television and advertising, we have become a nation of consumers and not citizens. And the system, if you want to use the word system, loves this. And here we have an election where a candidate can admit that he once smoked marijuana in his youth, and no one talks about the fact that there are thousands of Americans, many thousands, many of them black Americans, in prison for simple possession of marijuana. It just isn't talked about at all.
So, Daniel, what do you do about it?
Well, I don't think the answer is to vote for the lesser of two evils in large numbers.
What's the answer?
Well, one of the answers is to create a system which does a better job than our primary system in generating who becomes candidates. I mean, that clearly is a major failure. The nature of our primary system is such that we end up with people who are the ones least likely to do the kind of things which lead to the reforms we're talking about. And how do you do that? Well, I guess that will just have to be something which comes up from the bottom, or people who are concerned, forming activist groups to create change. There are one or two organizations such as Common Cause and so on. Maybe there should be more of that, attempts at trying to reform from outside.
1-800-423-8255 joins the conversation with Orlando Patterson, Jim Sleeper, Robert Reich, and others. John is on the line.
Hi there.
Hello, John. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I guess I come from almost the opposite view of the previous caller, which is in some ways saying this year, wouldn't it be more reasonable to have a very limited set of goals for a progressive point of view? Because, I mean, look at the macro factors. You've got it is the strongest economy in certainly a very long time. There's no major external threats. Crime is down overall. So for the majority of Americans, there's kind of a big incentive not to want to rock the boat. So it's kind of surprising that anybody with an insurgent point of view, other than from the entertainment value, is doing well at all. So isn't this a year not to worry about the presidential side of things, but to work on grassroots campaigns or one or two limited issues and kind of hold your fire till there seems to be more of an incentive for everybody in the country to want to make changes?
John, just read a good book and take the political year off.
John, this is where
you have to do other things than worry about the presidency.
John, this is where the pundits and the pollsters were absolutely wrong. The assumption months ago was that because we are living in a time of relative peace and prosperity, nobody cared, nobody is going to vote in these primaries. And then look what happened in South Carolina and Michigan. Look what's happening in terms of voter turnout in some of these primaries, record levels, double the turnout in previous primaries. Now, what is John McCain, what is the battle between John McCain and George Bush doing that is causing, even in this time of peace and prosperity, so many more, dramatically more people to turn out? I think it has to do with this notion of we are fed up with the old system. We want a very different kind of politics today. I think that again, Bill Bradley had that mantle 6 months ago. For reasons we've talked about in this program, he has lost it. But John McCain, regardless of what you feel about his record, his ideology, has taken up that mantle.
If I may add something to that,
Jim Sleeper, please.
I don't know that Bob Reich would disagree or would agree with this twist I want to put on it. The reason people are doing this toward McCain more than toward Bradley, I think, is because he taps into something that people are also looking for. They want to couple honor with entitlement. It's okay for Gore or Bradley to say, I want universal health care. I want a national sweeping solution, a kind of thing that appeals to a need that people have. They also want to see it posed in a certain way. And that's where I think we on the progressive side over the years have kind of dropped the ball. We kind of review issues of character and honor as cult of personality issues, as distractions from the systemic inequities. The nature of American political culture is the two have to be coupled. And faute de mieux, for want of anything better, we wind up seeing McCain do that, even though his positions are not ours. I think we should learn something from that.
Orlando Patterson, have you figured out who you're going to vote for?
Well, look, I agree with Robert, that there's something there. Certainly, people are fed up and do want a change in the system. I don't think they're being cynical. And I think it's, I mean, the problem with Bradley is very simple. The man is boring. And, you know, I mean, while I criticized earlier sort of candidate-centered politics, at the same time, you know, you have to recognize the power of charisma. Bradley is a bore, and it puts you to sleep. I mean, McCain certainly has the dynamism and the personality which appeals to voters.
We got to go.
One possible sort of optimistic scenario, it could be that precisely because McCain doesn't seem to have much of a platform, that, you know, he's teachable.
Let's hope. We're out of here. Orlando Patterson, thank you. Jim Sleeper, Bob Reich, Katrina Vandenhoevel. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston. Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation.
PRI, Public Radio International. From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by MotherNature.com, providing natural products and healthy advice online. MotherNature.com. By the Museum of Fine Arts, celebrating the work of a master printmaker and painter.